Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Certified Lover Boy, Certified Cinephile, shout out Atrioc. And today, we have kind of a wild episode for you all. We're going to start off with our thoughts on Smile 2, which is, I don't think elevated horror, but there's some aspects of it in there. And then we are going to be diving into our selections from the elevated horror subgenre. Before we get into it, Ty, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Isn't the movie, it's the event of seeing the movie. In 20 years, do you think you'll remember all of the movies you gave a 7 out of 10? Or will you remember the first movie you saw with your wife? Will you have better stories about a movie's camera work or the movies that made you cry? The Blast Movie app gives users a platform to log their favorite experiences with movies at their favorite theaters. Download Blast today to create your first virtual ticket, build your collection, share your memories on the Blast Movie app.
All right, so Blast Tick of the Week time here, and I'm stuck on the test build for Blast right now, which is basically just full of our dev team's ramblings, as well as some stupid tickets that I throw out there just to test some functionality. So my ticket of the week is from Johnny Blaze for John Wick Chapter 2. He said, good franchise, period. A plus, A plus.
Keeping it simple. So my ticket actually is from my movie date for Smile 2. I had a different ticket ready, but she had just posted. And the ticket reads, first and last time seeing a horror movie in theaters. I've always wanted to see one, and now I can finally say I did. I was absolutely terrified the entire time, but then again, I'm very easily scared. So in all honesty, I have no idea if this movie is considered to be good or bad within the genre. Last grade D, movie grade C minus. I can vouch for her. The last 40 minutes of the movie, she was in fetal position, looking sideways. Not at the screen. I think if I asked her anything that happened in the back half of this movie, she could not tell me. I felt horrible.
Great boyfriend alert.
Okay, hold on. She can attest. I gave her about 25 outs. I was like, look, this is going to be a jump scare torture chamber. I'm not looking forward to it. Please, like, do not feel like you need to come with me. She was advocating. She was insisting. I finally gave in. I still feel bad, but Katie, that one's on you.
All right. And before we jump all the way into Smile here, let me just real quick go. Make sure the logo's facing.
You better chug that whole thing.
Dude, okay, I tried on my review to do it. I got like a third of the way through this. I don't know how the fuck she did that.
Six times. I was counting. I think it was six water bottles she put down during that movie.
They go fast. She like kind of like does like the swirl thing or something. Those things just fly right down. Maybe the most impressive thing of the movie. I want to start this actually by real quick getting your thoughts on Smile 1.
Not exactly for me. I think there's some fun to be had, but I'm not a big jump scare guy. So nothing about this movie really stood out aside from an iconic ending. I think that the ending of Smile 1 will be for what Insidious is to people our age is what it will be for kids that saw Smile for the first time. I think that it has an iconic ending. But aside from that, not quite for me.
That's just disrespectful. If anything, the Insidious ending for this generation is going to be long legs, I'd imagine, right?
I don't know if the ending is that iconic, though. Is it?
I mean, with the, like, the kid and, I don't know, like, the doll, the discovery of the mom, I think it works. I don't think.
Long Legs is getting a re-release on Wednesday.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they're showing a sneak peek for Monkey.
I'm excited about Monkey.
Oh, but we're gonna have a good time talking about Monkey.
All right, hit me with your Blast ticket, or at least your watch experience for Smile 2 here. I will real quick say that I thought Smile 1 was just immensely overrated. I know that it got a lot of positive buzz, and heading in, my expectations were pretty high, and I was disappointed by how surface level everything seemed in that movie. So, go ahead.
And my ticket was very brief. It simply reads, I have no shame in saying I jumped out of my seat at one, maybe multiple points. Blast grade B, movie grade A minus. I am not a huge jump scare guy. I've told you this in the past. I was not looking forward to seeing this movie. So when I got to the theater, saw a movie that's all about jump scares, do a lot more interesting things than just jump scares. I think that this movie does a lot of really cool things with character work. The performances are great. The camera work's good. The score is awesome. It does a lot of things right and a lot of tie attributes that made me enjoy this theater watch.
So I'm a little confused because you do say you don't like jump scares. And in the past on the pod, you've specifically said jump scares are not scary. And ahead of this movie, you texted me, fuck, I'm going to piss my pants at Smile 2 because of the jump scares. So right. Please explain the logic.
The logic is I am a huge weenie. I think my ears are really sensitive. And when I know a jump scare is coming, I plug my ears as hard as I can because I hate the jolt of noise. There's nothing scary about it. It's just loud and it bothers me. So I just feel like I'm all tense and wound up from jump scares. It's manufactured scares. That's why jump scares are frustrating. I will say, in Smile 2, I felt like there were some really good, well-earned jump scares. It wasn't just some like bullshit fake-out jumps. There was good scares here.
There were some Juan-esque jump scares. I still think James is the king of the jump scare, though. Do you as well?
100%. Do you have a favorite from this movie, though?
Definitely the crowbar.
Oh, that was just so bad.
It happened so fast that like you didn't even realize what you saw until like 5 seconds later.
I had two, and they both came from Ray Nicholson. Also, shout out Ray Nicholson, Jack Nicholson's son. He is awesome for about 7 minutes in this movie. He plays the dead husband or the dead boyfriend of Sky.
Gotcha.
He has that phenomenal scene in the car where they're going back and forth arguing. It felt like Jack from The Shining. It was really cool. It was almost like a JDW in Tenet where you could see the mannerisms and you could see his dad like flowing through him. It was cool. But
yeah,
two jump scares. One, she is performing like the concert prep and you get the flash of his face smiling at her out of nowhere mid performance. I literally like lost my popcorn. And then while she's at the banquet giving the speech, and Paul is walking on stage with a creepy smile and he goes away, and the lady, the grandma, goes to console her and he jumps out at her, all deranged, all disfigured. That one got me really bad.
Interesting. I'm sure you loved what happened after that scene at the banquet, though, with the old lady just catching
eating
a
shit.
Bow. Yeah, that's crazy.
Poor
this
lady.
Movie really takes some risks, I think, in some of its jump scares. It's pretty gory, which is something that the first movie I didn't associate with that. I didn't think that Smile 1 was very gory at all, but this one had some grossness to it. In the scene from the trailer, so I don't think this is a spoiler, we see the guy like beat his face in with the plate and missed a muscle. How many reps?
How many reps could I do it or him?
You.
Oh, dude, I'm maxing out. That's like I can get eight skull crushes.
And one of the jump scares, like 15 minutes later or so, is like kind of spurred on by the sound of the flesh of his jaw falling off. That is vile. That is something that the first one did not go anywhere near, and something that I was pretty impressed with. I really loved the first 45 minutes to an hour of this movie. I thought it was fantastic. And it makes me wonder, like, is this first like hour or even just the first scene in the conversation for the best horror movie openings in recent memory?
Well, let's talk that opening scene. It's about a, it's got to be a 9-10 minute one shot of just high octane action. Yeah, I thought it was phenomenal.
Okay. There's a character that comes in later, and I don't want to spoil anything, but for those of you who have seen it, his name is Morris. Do you think Morris is better if it's the character from the opening scene?
Yes. Morris is easier to root for, and it's easier to buy into Morris if it's a familiar face.
I agree. I think that there's a method there too. Like, we'll save this for spoilers. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself here. I wanted to ask, are the Smile movies the perfect mix of elevated and I don't like, what's the non-elevated horror? Is it just like normal horror?
Regular horror movie. Well, I have to say, like, if I'm thinking of elevated horror movies, I'm thinking Babadook. I'm thinking Lighthouse. I'm thinking The Witch. I'm thinking Hereditary. I don't immediately think of Smile. So are you really leaning into Naomi Scott's character, Sky Riley, and her dealing with all of her mental health issues? I don't think I see it with Smile.
When I think of elevated horror, and this is definitely not full-blown, like, A24 neon productions kind of thing, but when I think of elevated horror, I come back to the cinematography being top-notch and above the scale of any normal horror movie. I think of the characters having more depth than they would in a usual horror movie. And usually I think of more, like, just well-crafted mise-en-scène or, like, settings for everything. Like, everything has a look. The director has an established voice or a tone around everything. And I think the Smile franchise does do that while also maintaining the, like, normal horror of jump scares and, like, shitty humor and stuff like that. And it's just kind of this mesh that I think more horror movies need.
Yeah, it has a good balance, and to your point, it's needed because it's a good bridge, if you will. I think maybe a gateway to elevated or vice versa. I don't know. It works for me. I feel like this is a Thai movie because I get a blend of both those elements. Great camera work, great score, great character work. Still just a lot of fun. And there is a lot of fun to be had. Whether you like the back half of this movie or not, it's wonky. It's goofy. I think it's fun.
Interesting. We both mentioned the character work here. I gotta say, a lot of that is because of Naomi Scott. She fucking kills it. Oh my god.
Is this one of the best performances of the year?
It has to be, I'd imagine. At least for the first hour. Again, I think that... So at the hour mark of this movie, I went to the bathroom. And on my way there, I checked my phone, made sure I wasn't missing anything. And I was like, holy shit, there's still an hour and 10 minutes left in this movie. This is going to be rough. And I was right, and from my point of view at least, in that the back half of this movie really drags. It repeats a lot of the same themes, both character-wise and like on the grand scheme of the movie. And it never scratches deeper than like the surface level for these characters. That's what I'm... When I keep on saying that first hour is so good, it's because it sets up things that could have been amazing in the second half. And instead, the second half is just more of the first half when I wanted it to go further.
Well, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. So, spoilers ahead, if you haven't seen Smile 2, I do recommend it. I think Steve and I are probably a mixed bag, or at least have a difference in opinion here, but I think it's worth a shot. I think you would agree.
Yeah, I think this is a movie you should definitely see on the big screen, especially with a couple of friends. I went to this with my buddy Samson from college. We went and saw the first one together, so it was cool to kind of get back to our roots here and see the second. And we both kind of had the same thoughts, but we had a great time at the theater.
So what I'm getting at is, you keep referencing the first hour of this movie being awesome, and I think it has great momentum. I think it kicks ass, really. And then there is a sit down with this character you mentioned, Morris, and he explains the rules of this parasite, this smile creature that is infecting our lead character, Sky Riley, and how he believes they can defeat this creature, that he has the ability to stop her heart temporarily, in theory killing this parasite, and then bringing her back to life. I think this is where the movie will go off the rails for some people. Is that what happened to you?
It's not even the concept of that. I love Flatliners. Come on, classic Kiefer. But I think that the way it goes through this and the way it makes it all pointless, which we are spoilers here once again, I think that the fake conversations with people and everything was done to death in the first one with the therapist. I saw that whole thing coming, that whole drive over there and everything was fake. Obviously, she's not just going to be like in control and teleport seats and stuff. I think that it's not really the plot for me that went off the rails. I don't know. What did you think of that?
I think I was just too caught up in how invested I was in Sky Riley as a character. And this is a testament to Naomi Scott just kicking ass. But I was so riveted by her character and was rooting for her to win. And with the help of Morris, they take down this creature, that I was blind to all of the clear signs that this was a dream. That Jem, after getting shit on a year ago by Sky, just magically appears at her apartment 45 minutes after a phone call and says, you know, kumbaya, all is well, we're good friends again, and talks like in the weirdest, worst dialogue of the movie. Just sounds like a fake person, which makes sense now. And then you have Morris, someone that we're rooting for, doesn't have a phone number. He's tagged as unknown. It just, all of it didn't make sense. And these were issues I had with the movie that were kind of justified by this. It was all a dream. I think this might be the best example of a it was all a dream plot twist. I think it's the only time it's ever worked for me.
I think it's still lazy. I have a few things to say here, so get ready to put on Mr. Listen ears. Number one, I immediately knew that the whole Jem thing was faked, because when she leaves the voicemail for her, Jem calls her back in like 5 seconds after a 45-second long voicemail and knows exactly what she said. That for me was the immediate tip off. Number two, I was rooting for this movie because it does something that's really hard. Smile 1, since it was a standalone original concept movie, we didn't know if the main character was going to be able to break this curse or not. But since this is Smile 2, we know there's going to be a Smile 3, especially in today's Hollywood landscape. So you know that Sky Riley has to die. And that's an inherently impossible task for the filmmaker to make you care about her, which is so it's very bold for them to take on that risk of just yes, you know this person's going to die. Fuck it. Buy into her anyway. But as much as I bought into her in the first half, it felt like in the second half, she just got kind of whiny. She starts off at the 45, maybe hour long minute mark. She has this huge revelation and she's like, maybe I am the problem here. Maybe I'm ruining everything I touch. I hurt everybody I know. I'm letting everybody down right now. Then she has that fucking revelation six more times in the second half of this movie.
But what is that? What are you talking about her whining? She's being infected by this fucking creature. Of course she's gonna be a little on edge.
No, I'm saying she's whining, having that same speech, having that same moment so many times. It's like, yes, you realized this 45 minutes ago. Now stop fucking up.
All right. So I feel like, yes, this movie is moving in circles at times. Where do you, what gets left on the cutting room floor? At what point do you say, all right, stop here and then jump back to the concert or jump back to the ending? What are you keeping? What are you taking out?
I am taking out the fake mom kill. I'm taking out that whole thing. I just have her escaping from the wellness resort and going on this drive to Morris. And it should be as soon as she arrives in the Pizza Hut, she's fucked. I also think that, oh man, there are a few scenes that have jump scares towards the middle of this movie, or not even jump scares, but just manufactured scares where it's all fake, I could have probably done without the banquet scene. I probably could have done without the onstage scene. These are things that I think if you cut it down to a 90-minute movie, the movie gets better. And then you see those scenes on YouTube as deleted scenes in like 2 years, and you're like, oh man, this would have been sick.
That's crazy. I feel like it did such a great job of showing Skye just unravel in real time, her career imploding in real time, especially with that banquet scene. I think that's one you gotta keep. I think that you have an opportunity to maybe scratch the flashback stuff with the car accident with her boyfriend. I think you can kind of scrap the, I mean, they're great scenes, but I think you can leave those on the cutting room floor. That's an extra 10 minutes, but I think you need to leave the one where she accuses Joshua of tanking her dressing room, again, showing she's losing her mind. And then the concert scene where she's yelling at her crew and shows that she's going crazy. And then the banquet, like basically like showing up for like underprivileged youth and making a fool of herself in front of everyone. I think you need to leave those three in.
Well, those are the three I said.
Well, womp womp.
So I think that the disconnect here is that by the time she's in her apartment and like seeing all these people there, it's already insanely clear that she's insane. Like, let's cut out, I don't know, two or three scenes that show she's insane. We know she's going insane, or that we know that the demon has her, and we can see that everybody else thinks she's insane. I don't think that point needs to be driven home like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times in the second half of this movie.
It's not that she's insane. It's her insanity derailing her career. Like, it's happening in front of a lot of eyes. Like, I think you can cut the stuff in her house. Like, the Alfredo nude dude in the bathroom scene can get cut. I think you can cut, like, the Resident Evil, like, mob of people, like, only moving when she looks away thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need that.
Can you cut the signing scene, do you think?
Yeah, maybe.
Yes.
I think those are three scenes you could eliminate, but I think where this movie shined was showing what could happen if a famous person was infected with this thing and how it could really fuck up their career. And they leaned into that a little bit. I like that.
Let's talk about the ending then. The ending that I was sure was going to happen since the moment I saw the trailer, which is the same thing that I thought when I saw the Rings trailer. Do you remember that?
No.
The Ring 3 was this trailer where like the whole airplane had the screens showing the Ring video. And it's like, okay, so in Smile 3, who are we going to follow out of these fucking like 200,000 people in the stadium watching this concert?
No, I think that Smile 3 is like, not Morris, but we have a Morris, like enough people are infected by this where it's no longer a, okay, these people are just fucking crazy. Now there's like a working task force on how to defeat this creature. And they're trying to finally put it down. And the third movie, we see this thing go down.
Or do you think that it moves individually from person to person? And then we end up getting like a Truth or Dare 2 scenario where like everybody's watching it on YouTube. and the curse just passes around for infinity.
Okay. I'm glad you brought up Truth or Dare. I think that the Smile franchise is actually the only franchise ever that is reliant and probably better off with jump scares, because if it didn't have them, if it didn't have the jump scares, if it didn't have a really creepy score, it's basically just Truth or Dare with that weird smiley face. It's not scary if there's no music. It's like Ross from Friends without a laugh track. It doesn't work.
You're telling me you didn't find the pool scene scary in Truth or Dare, where he like steps on the ball and just snaps his neck?
That, God, I'm telling you, like when Skye was in the freezer with the creature, but it's in human form and it's doing this weird voice and there's no jump scare. There's no fear there. It's like the Babadook when it's just the mom running around and not this creature from a book. Just doesn't land.
I want to point out one more thing before we move on to the Babadook, and that is, this is literally the same thing as The Night House for me. For those of you who saw The Night House, entering the 45-minute mark of that movie, I was ready to put it in my top 15 of all time. And leaving that movie, I think I gave it a 4 out of 10, which is also what I gave Smile. And I like, there's so much, and maybe it's just a difference in what you and I want from a movie, but in The Night House, they had the opportunity to go down this really interesting path of showing the real horror of losing somebody, especially to suicide, and trying desperately to find meaning behind that and finding nothing, which she does for the first like 45 minutes of The Night House. And then it was actually the devil himself. And there's a bunch of corny like CGI demon action. And that's how I felt about Smile too. There is so much there, and it, like, the concept of Smile itself is so cool to me, with like how grief passes from person to person and how there isn't just a way to get over that. And it showing that in the compressed schedule of 7 days is really cool. And I was expecting this movie to dig deeper into that theme of grief. And instead, I mean, the death scene is treated almost as a joke with the wait guy. Like, at what, 15 seconds after she does that, we get a clip of her Googling, like, does vomit have DNA, to see if she's going to get caught at the crime scene. I think that there's an opportunity here to actually say something about grief. And for me, it just didn't do it. And instead, it went down a cheaper, lazier path of demon action that, of course, was all just a dream.
I think that's what you get when you get the bridge movie between elevated and regular horror.
There you go. Right. Let's talk
let's
about
talk
real Babadook. Elevated horror. Yeah. Top five movies about depression. Go.
No. Rocky IV, Vision Quest, Rocky I, Creed, and Creed II. Watch those instead. I don't watch movies about depression. I'm going to leave this to you. It's like your wheelhouse.
Manchester by the Sea, La La Land. What's the one with Oscar Isaac? Inside Llewyn Davis. All great. No, but The Babadook is one of the first horror movies, maybe the first horror movie I ever saw that was actually just like a full-on allegory for something else. And I think that it does that work pretty well for the majority of the movie. This whole conversation is going to be filled with spoilers, by the way. So if you haven't seen The Babadook, go check it out. But what do you think The Babadook's apex mountain was? Like, do you think that this peaked on release? Do you think it peaked when Jenna Ortega was like, I still prefer The Babadook and Scream 5? Or do you think it was when the meme became that, like, The Babadook was a gay icon? Do you know about that?
No.
So Netflix, like, had a category that was movies starring gay icons. And The Babadook was, like, the first movie on there. And everybody was like cracking up. The Babadook is a gay icon. He like made a book about himself. How much more obvious can he be? Blah, blah, blah. Pause for a sec. Can you talk for a sec?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. My headphones just like glitched out for a sec there. Sorry about that.
No shit. All right, Jack.
Oh. Around the 30-minute mark.
So yeah, you had brought up the gay icon thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll just jump right into my thing.
Cool.
No, I think the apex mountain for The Babadook was Chris Stuckman's YouTube review 9 years ago, back when we had Prime Stuckman, man, like making fun of other movies, still giving out letter grades. He gave this an A. This video got a million views. Like, everyone was all buzzed about The Babadook because Chris Stuckman was talking about it.
I like that take a lot, and it makes me nostalgic for the Stuckmanator. Is he doing his Halloween series this year? Do you know?
Yes, and it's been so good. It's like the last of a dying religion with that account. I feel like the Halloween special stuff has been phenomenal this year. We talked about a movie called Idle Hands. Totally up our alley. I'll read through his slate. He did make a video about Smile 2. Do you know what movie he didn't make a video about?
Megalopolis.
Joker 2. He didn't do one for Megalopolis either. Okay. He's done Final Destination 5, a movie from my childhood. Idle Hands, Monster House. Saw 2, Caddo Lake, and Dog Soldiers.
I think he's on the docket. Shouldn't he be talking about Halloween Ends this year? Or no?
Oh, God. With his new track record, there's no way he's talking about it.
What if he actually just really liked it? He promises. I want to talk quickly, getting back on track to the Babadook, about the importance of cinematography and elevated horror. I feel like that's kind of the hallmark of this. Would you agree or no?
I think when I'm looking at the Babadook trying to find a value prop, I think that it's the complete lack of jump scares. There is not a single jump scare in this movie. I don't know if cinematography is the horcrux of this story. I would say the heavy themes and the clear, like, leaning into the allegory of depression and the lack of jump scares. I think the camera works fine, but I didn't think it was super groundbreaking.
It's not even necessarily the camera work, but like the way everything looks. I feel like in all elevated horror movies, it has this look that is just so much better than any other like type. Like if you compare Scream 5 or what's a more recent one? Smile 2 is half and half. Like Abigail. Let's say Abigail. And you look at that against Hereditary, Midsommar, Babadook, Raw, Titan, like all of these movies that are in that elevated genre, it's just not even comparable. And it's more than just the shots and everything. Like obviously everything has to have that classic, uh-oh, the camera's going upside down. I wonder if things are going to change for this character. But it's also like the color grading and just the voice of the director behind the camera. I feel like that has a big presence in not just the Babadook, but all of these elevated horror movies.
What is the best cinematography in a horror movie?
That's a good question. Do you have an answer? Offer it.
The Lighthouse is the correct answer.
I like it.
Maybe Midsommar. Maybe.
I think I actually have to go with the original Ringu. Which may be a little bit of an offbeat take, but that I feel like the look of the original Ring just like completely changed how horror movies looked for like the next 15 years.
Very fair. Is this the best children's rhyme or song in a movie ever? The Babadook, dook, 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 dook.
You can't get rid of the Babadook. My dad and I watched this movie together the first time I saw it when I was like 14 or something, and I had no idea what this was about. And he, for the next like 3 weeks, would be ba 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 ba, dook dook dook. Fuck you! Stop it! No, I think that the best children's song or anything has to be "Tiptoe Through the Window." Insidious. Nice. I mean, that song sends shivers down my spine still just thinking about that scene.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other elevated horror movies before The Babadook. I mean, this was 2014. Was there any elevated horror movies that came out before this? Or did this kind of just kickstart that era of horror movies?
I'm sure there are some that came out before, like, I mean, you could make the argument that even dating back to Eraserhead would be elevated horror. I'd imagine that's where that belongs. But I do think that this is what kind of made it so popular in our generation as like I'm not into those stupid 80s movies. I like the good shit like this and The Witch. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you can make a case for Black Swan, but I don't think it's enough horror. I think it's closer to like psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. I think The Babadook came out, and it's the reason Hereditary got a budget and became as big as it did and catapulted A24. I watched The Babadook, and all I can think about is Toni Collette in Hereditary. Like, Ari Aster clearly was pulling and was inspired by this movie. I think this kind of started that era of movies.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right here. And even if Black Swan is technically elevated horror, I feel like people don't watch that as a horror movie. I feel like it's more of a spiraling artist story than anything else. Do you like the ending, though? I feel like this is such, like, going through this movie, I'm at like a 4 out of 5 the whole time. The whole metaphor is hitting for me. I'm like, God damn, this kid won't shut up. I'm right in the mom's shoes. And then the ending just fucking blows it.
It's not great. I kind of felt the same way. I was watching the first like 40 minutes of this movie, kind of how you felt with Smile 2. And it's like, oh shit, is this better than Hereditary? Did I finally see something that could dethrone it? And then it ends. Like, the last 20 minutes of this is pretty lousy.
It is. And like, can you imagine how easy my life would be if I just said, go away to the depression and it just left. Just walked out the door.
And then feed it some worms.
Yeah, feed it some worms every couple of weeks. I mean, I don't get it. And I feel like there are other endings like that could have been better. Like, how would you have ended this movie? Do you know?
No, I don't. Oh, God. I think this is one of the cases where I'd say this is a better short film. I think this is this could be a great 25-30 minute short film instead. I think it just ran out of legs once she was overwhelmed and overtaken by her depression. I think that's where it falls off the rails.
Interesting. I think that the runtime is fine on this one, but that last 20 does suck. I think my ending for this, I know you haven't watched BoJack Horseman, but The View from Halfway Down, amazing, amazing episode, where basically it takes place inside of his head as he's like committing suicide. And I think that going down that route and having her like pulled out by the son calling 911 or doing something to save her, I think that makes this movie and leads to a happy ending that actually works in a lot better of a way than the one that we got.
Maybe, but then you almost want her to save herself, I would think, at least in some capacity. Do you think that leaving the worms for the depression is... So I was trying to like justify it in my head, like, what's going on here? And I think that what this movie's trying to say is that like it can never go away, and like your grief and pain will never 100% go away. And there are days and moments where you need to like embrace that pain, like it's okay to. And I think that was the movie's way of saying, feed your depression worms every now and then, but it can't control your life like it was controlling her life in the entire movie.
I don't know, man. Maybe things are just different in Britain,
Australia.
It is.
I think, yeah, it's an Australian movie.
My bad.
Just a movie.
Do you have anything else to add about this, or can we move on to my selection from this week?
Dude, this is one of the worst recommendations you gave me. I knew when you requested a movie change right before I watched it, I was in trouble. And you were right. I was right. This movie's gross. It's not a Thai movie. It's pretentious. I can't stand Raw.
Wow, there you go. Okay.
I have a theory about this. I think that anyone that likes this movie or was engaged with it has some like weird fetish or kink for what's going on in this movie. I don't get it. There is something weird in the back of your mind that makes you like Raw.
This isn't a movie that you're meant to enjoy watching. Obviously, but I have a great first watch experience with this. And it comes from...
You're not supposed to like it, but I did.
No, okay. The reason you will laugh at, because so I had heard all this buzz about Titane, which is Julia Ducournau's second like big feature film. It won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, and that's the one that I wanted to switch to because I do think you'd like that more. It is still like body horror-y and kind of gross, but it has more behind it, in my opinion. And I was really excited about that, and I have a great watch experience for that too, which I'm sure I'll get to talk through at some point on the spot. But I was like, all right, let's watch her first movie, Raw. And I had no idea this was a foreign language film. I popped it on for a AJ Steve movie night over FaceTime.
You're an asshole.
I had no idea what it was about. And
I bet.
There's a scene in this movie, again, spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen, where someone's finger gets cut off, and AJ, when he realized that she was going to start eating the finger, got up from his chair and started running around in circles going, ah! And that is one moment that is forever ingrained in my mind. It's one of the funniest watch experiences I have ever had in my life. And it makes this movie so much better for me.
I shit you not, dude. When she pulled the covers and saw that that dude's leg was eaten off, I almost threw up. This movie's gross. What does it have to say? Like, what messages? What themes? Like, what's elevated here beyond it just being pretty?
You'll find a solution.
Oh, dude, that ending. So gross. This movie's just gross.
It is. I want to ask you a quick question, just a like little Thai character question. Would you have eaten the raw liver or whatever it is, the rabbit kidney?
Fuck no. Absolutely not. I'm transferring that day. I'm getting on the phone. I'm getting my room and board back, and I am out of there.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think I make it to that day. I think they come in and throw my bed out the window. I'm just like, hey, mom. Yeah, this isn't for me. Fuck this.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but they were not doing this on the campus tour.
Speaking of like the people in this movie, one of the funniest parts of this movie is just how nobody reacts to anything that's happening around them.
All's well, man. Eat away.
The sisters in this movie, one sister bites a chunk out of the other's cheek, like in the middle of the quad or something, and just nobody like bats an eye. They're like, oh, yeah, just another Tuesday.
That's what happens when you eat the rabbit kidney.
That said, give Garance Marillier her flowers. She is fucking amazing in this movie. She plays Justine, who does make an appearance in Titane. You should check it out one day. One of the grossest fucking scenes I've ever seen in my life. I'll explain it after the pod. But she is amazing in this movie. This movie is shot so fucking well. Julia Ducournau is the like modern David Cronenberg in the way that she's able to pursue body horror and make it look so much more like, I don't know. It just doesn't look as like grimy and low budget as Cronenberg does. And she has like this whole voice. I think she's awesome. I can't wait. She's collaborating with A24 in the next year or two, I believe, for her next project. I'm very excited for that. And I really do think she's one of the most talented horror filmmakers in the business right now.
So, Titane or Raw for you?
Titane for sure. And part of that is also the watch experience. I was at Wesleyan when this movie came out, and I wanted to see it to review it for the school paper. And the closest showing was in Urbana-Champaign, which is about an hour drive. Luckily, I have some friends down there, and I was like talking to my good friend Al, and I was like, "Hey, you know, I'm going down to see this pretty fucked up movie tonight, but I'm probably going to grab dinner with Boone and Kaz, a couple of our friends, beforehand. If you want to come with to that part or anything. And he was like, oh yeah, dude, let's go. I'm so excited. And I was like, all right, just so you know, like, this movie, it's not something you should mess with. Like, I've heard people have been throwing up at the showings and stuff. He's like, I'll come with you. It doesn't matter. When I tell you these fuckers didn't close their mouths for the entirety of this movie, like, they didn't know. Titan, for those of you who don't know, it's about a woman who has sex with a car and gets pregnant and then has to go undercover as a boy at a firefighter station to evade the police because she is a serial killer. And if that isn't the coolest fucking premise for a movie you've ever heard, I don't know what's wrong with you. But it was gross. I don't think it was quite as gross as Raw, but they were not fans. And their reactions the entire time kept me going through that.
Yeah, brother. I don't think I'm going to be watching Titan. Appreciate the recommendation, but I'm okay. I'm really okay.
Damn. This next
movie, though, this is like Thai elevated horror wheelhouse. I think The Lighthouse is one of the greats. I really love this movie. Do you have a notable first watch here?
I went and saw it with my parents.
What?
Dude, call. I go into these things blind and then just get fucked over every single time. Yeah, I went and saw this with my parents. They absolutely hated it. And I remember I was sitting there in the chair like, wow, this is something new. Like, this is something that I will probably remember as a hallmark of watching horror movies in theaters in my life. Like, this is going to be my shining.
That's a perfect comp. It's so funny. I, like, vividly remember being scarred, haunted by The Lighthouse the first watch. I didn't see it on the big screen. I streamed it in our basement, pitch dark, and it was the most unsettling movie I'd ever seen, which felt bizarre to me because it's not like technically scary. It's just uneasy. It's an isolation, cabin fever kind of movie, but you have Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson at the absolute peak of their powers, top of their game. They're both great here and do a great job of making you feel uneasy as if you're on that lighthouse.
What's the best? Is this the best small cast movie of all time with, like, I'd say small cast is like 5 and under named characters?
Yeah. I think the only movie that comes to mind is Collateral, Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise, Michael Mann movie. It is good. I don't think it's Lighthouse good.
I have a few that at least make it close. Number one, would any of the Before movies count?
Yeah, totally.
All of those then. Number two, I think Cloverfield Lane gives it a run for its money. It's close for me, at least.
It's not close. It's not close. Lighthouse is better. Come on.
Ex Machina is one that I think I prefer, not as a horror movie, but just in general. And then a couple of honorable mentions. Creep, very good. Cube, I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Moon, Sam Rockwell, solo cast. That's awesome. And Locke with Tom Hardy just driving around the whole time. I think those are all good.
Locke is sneaky. Mm-hmm. Locke is sneaky. Tom Hardy's just sneaky, man. It cracks me up. He's just Venom now. And bike riders.
Yeah. I think you broke my leg. You see that trailer?
Yeah. Bro's just having fun at this point.
Next so week.
Oh, no, you're kidding.
I wish.
What's our horror movie, like, tag with that, though?
Slashers.
Oh, sweet. Mm-hmm. Sweet. We and saved best for last?
Redemption on my part. You are going to fucking love the movie I picked, I think.
What did you pick?
Deep Red from Dario Argento.
Okay.
The King of the Giallo.
I'll have fun. I'll have fun. And we have kind of a special surprise coming for our viewers who watch the videos. I think I'm going to dress up a little bit.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. But Lighthouse, I think this is Eggers' best. Where does it rank for you in his filmography?
It's firmly in the middle. Northman, for me, by far the number one.
Sick.
Lighthouse, big step down, still by far the number two. Not a huge witch guy.
Yeah, I would go Lighthouse, Northman, witch. Witch isn't my cup of tea, man. It's too slow. It's too elevated, if mm-hmm. you will.
Is elevated just code for boring?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. It's not tie on paper, which is why the Lighthouse shouldn't work for me. Like, this really isn't my thing. Also, Nosferatu, I think, has a chance to be number one. I finally saw the trailer for that. I think it looks fucking sick, dude.
I'm very excited. I'm a little scared. So right before this, actually, for another project coming to the Blast YouTube at the end of the month, I watched The Munsters 2022 from Rob Zombie. And he turned Nosferatu into like a EDM DJ. The song goes, "I'm a Lego bat," which I feel like that's going to ruin the Eggers movie for me.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah.
Do you like the Rob Zombie Halloween movies?
I hate everything Rob Zombie has ever done in his life.
I'm not kidding you, man. I don't know what happened, what Kool-Aid everyone's been drinking, but TikTok is trying to convince everyone Rob Zombie Halloween 1 and 2 are like the greatest thing since sliced bread. I don't know what happened in the last like year, but I remember those movies getting slam dunked on every chance people had.
TikTok, I feel like, is a constant cycle of like, this movie is actually really shitty, but then there's a subgroup of people who just want to be contrarians, and they're like, nah, it's really good. And then the contrarian groups grow so big that the contrarians move back to, nah, this movie actually is shitty.
All right, so give it a couple years, and then people are going to be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, wait, what was the white horse about again? The Lighthouse cement Robert Pattinson's comeback?
Which came first, Lighthouse or Good Time?
Ooh, I think Good Time, but I think Good Time became bigger after Lighthouse came out.
I was going to say the same thing. I watched The Lighthouse and was like, holy shit, like Edward from Twilight, this guy can play ball. And then I went back and watched Good Time on Netflix. It's like, holy shit, this isn't just a one-off thing. And then by the time he was cast as Batman, I had no doubts. I feel like a lot of people did. I had already been caught up on Pattinson and what he could do. I think this is absolutely his like reclaim to fame.
I think Pattinson's role in Tenet got him Batman.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all suited up. Looks the part. He could be Bruce Wayne. I think we're going to get a version of Bruce Wayne in this next one, or maybe part three, that looks like his character in Tenet.
I think so, too. And I can't fucking wait. I can't wait for Batman 2 as well. That news just dropped recently about, what's his name? There's some like evil doctor from that was one of the first recurring villains in the Detective Comics. This is going to be a fucking awesome, awesome movie.
Maybe Hugo Strange.
Yes, yes, that's it. For me, I knew Pattinson was back as soon as I saw High Life. You ever seen that one?
No.
Ooh, I love that one. I think I gave it a Blast Steal of the Week a little bit ago because somebody hated it. But a weird little like masturbation streak for Pat.
Yeah, oh boy.
Yeah, there's a weird scene in The Lighthouse, a weirder scene in High Life. There's some weird shit in that movie, man. But this movie, I think, for the broad public, really made him a prominent pop culture figure again. But honestly, he's not even the best performer in this movie.
I was just going to say, who's better? I think Defoe clears.
I think so, too. He gives is this the best rant in movie history?
Fortnite. Yes, it is. I this fucking movie is so good. I don't know. I feel like Pattinson gives the better rant. And you goddamn farts.
That is great. But I can't believe you're not bringing up You Can't Handle the Truth, That's probably the best rant in cinematic history from a guy who doesn't even like A Few Good Men. My favorite is probably, I never misfiled anything. Not once, not one time.
That's hilariosity legend.
Mm-hmm. But I think the true best, in my opinion, like 100 years from now, people will talk about the people have been asking me if I'm back and I haven't really had an answer. That's one of the greatest scenes in action movie history.
But yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
So you can either hand over your son or you can die screaming alongside him. Shout out to Foe in that one too.
Yeah. Dude, what? Eagle Eye.
Yeah, seriously.
But The Lighthouse, I don't know how you felt about this. I told you that my like experience of this was so uneasy. I'll never forget watching the ending scene of Pattinson finally getting up to the lighthouse and touching it and basically having this like orgasmic ear rape moment to close out the movie. It was so confusing, so uncomfortable, so unsettling. I love every second of it.
I love that ending a lot. As a Greek mythology fan too, he becomes Prometheus at the end there, the kind of sharer of light to man. It I think that the metaphor that ending ties all the metaphors in the movie together. I think it's perfect, and I think the memes have made it even better.
Okay, that's what's great about this movie. It was so unsettling the first time. I love watching this with the boys on rewatch because we just fucking crack up at those two bickering the whole movie.
You don't like me cooking?
It's so good. Let's not mess with this eagle.
This is a 10 out of 10 movie. Absolutely. It's gorgeous. Do you like the black and white decision, by the way?
I love the black and white. I love the aspect ratio decision. I think everything about this movie is just flawless.
So my parents, they gave me so much shit after this movie because I always hate on black and white movies from back in the day. And the reasoning is not just because it's black and white, because I think black and white is a fine stylistic choice unless you're doing it for the fucking 30th Frankenstein movie in a row just because. But I think black and white can be a great stylistic choice. But back then, I'm sure those movies would have been shot in color if they could shoot in color. And it's just a failure of their time. It's not like, oh my God, this is so pretty in black and white. Like, I think that's so stupid. And I fucking hate old movies. Old movies are inherently worse than new ones.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's how it's supposed to go.
Well, unless. Dude, and then Fantasy is out here saying Citizen Kane's still the greatest of all time. I don't understand it. I don't
Fantasy.
Get it.
Fantasy. That one's crazy to me. What do you think his Blast favorite movie is?
Barbarian.
That's up there for me.
He actually just watched, I saw on his letterbox, he just logged A Tale of Two Eyes, I think it is called, which is one of my favorite movies ever. It's one half from Dario Argento, and the other half, let me double check here, but it's an adaptation of two different Edgar Allan Poe stories, and it's done absolutely wonderfully. I'm blanking on the other one. It might be Friedkin, but check that out if anybody hasn't seen it.
I just checked. I was losing by 1 point in Fantasy to Spence when we started this pod. I won by 35. I don't know what happened, but wow. Derrick Henry and Baker just went nuclear.
Wow. Okay.
Yay. Elevated horror. All right.
Yeah, let's close this thing out.
What does every elevated horror movie need?
For me, it is a theme. Like, it's something that hasn't been explored in a horror movie before, or at least hasn't been explored well. And it needs to go about diving into that theme in a new way as well.
So you must be a really big fan of Beau Is Afraid.
In less than 4 hours.
Shout out Beau Is Afraid. I love Beau Is Afraid. The one thing that I always think of when I think of elevated horror is just a flawed protagonist. Someone that is vile in some capacity or is done wrong in some capacity, but I can't help but root for them. When I think of elevated horror, honestly, I think you can throw Sky Riley in that conversation. You know, it's that middle ground movie.
All she Toni did was Collette kill Hereditary.
Pattinson in The Lighthouse. Like, those are the characters I associate with elevated horror.
I like it. I like that take. Let's round this thing out with a draft and then call it a night.
Three movies.
Five.
Three.
I believe in you. You can make it to five. Come on.
All right. I go first.
Sure.
Give me Hereditary.
The fact that was even a thought for you is so funny to me. My first pick, and I don't give a shit, I'll give you either of the others. The best elevated horror of all time is Midnight Mass, and I'm taking that here. I'm standing firmly that you can have Hill House if you want in this draft, and we can even it out, but that is the best elevated horror of all time. And number two, I am taking Us.
Does Us count?
I think it does.
I mean, that's great, but I don't... Like, is Get Out elevated horror? I don't think so.
I would argue it is, because it has something to say, at least politically and socially. And the characters are more in-depth than usual characters in horror movies. It's shot better than most horror movies, written better than most horror movies. I think it's elevated.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, I get two picks now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you for cheating. I'll take Hill House and Bly Manor. Okay. That is ridiculous. This is a movie draft.
That's fine. You can have the two, and now we're even. I firmly believe that the best elevated horror is in limited series.
Midnight Mass is probably the best scary horror project ever.
I agree. My number three pick, then, I'm going with Candyman 2022. Phenomenal. For those of you who've seen it, obviously you know that. And my number four, I could double up here. I won't. Is Get Out on the board, or have we decided no?
No, go ahead, take it. Yeah. You confirmed it.
Cool. Get Out at my number four.
It's so funny you brought up Candyman 2022. When you asked me elevated horror for like what came before Babadook, I was thinking the 92 version, but I think it falls more into folk than it does elevated. I don't think it's quite there.
Even slasher.
Yes. Even slasher. Hmm. So I've got two picks then.
Yep.
Give me The Lighthouse and you really took it out. Damn it. It Follows.
Nice. That's a great take, honestly. I have one pick left here. Going to give out some honorable mentions to Mother. I think that movie's great. Titan, obviously, I've glazed that already. Eraserhead, also great. But as long as you let me take this, I'm going with The Empty Man.
Very, very Steve pick. Mm-hmm. Very Steve.
Little recap here. My team, Midnight Mass, Us, Candyman 2022, Get Out, and The Empty Man.
Hereditary, Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, The Lighthouse, and It Follows.
Wow. I wonder who won that one. join us next week for Slasher. I want to do a 10-pick Slasher draft.
10?
Yeah. Don't worry about it. I'll only pick offbeat takes that you've never heard of.
And you'll still probably beat me. This is you drafting every rookie in fantasy.
Uh-huh. Every rookie is two. I had a really good time shooting this one. And this is like one of my favorite pods we actually shot in a while. So thanks for coming on again, Ty. Or I guess certified love for my certified cinephile.
Where did you get that? Because I'm thinking producer Jack was like, wait a minute. Ty loves this song. I think you should do a play on words.
No, it was an Atrioc video. I don't know if you've ever seen him on YouTube. He does like marketing content. Can't even remember the context of the joke, but he made it. And I was like, oh, that's it. That's the tiny intro. I was teetering on Art the Clown. This is way better.
Certified lover boy, certified cinephile.
There you go. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Blast Podcast. And be sure to download the Blast Movie app if you haven't already. Go to the App Store, search Blast Movie app, and it'll be the first result. Or head to our website at www.blast.movies, or sorry, .blastmovies.net, and check out all our latest content news, as well as a link to download it there. Check out our TikTok at blast.movies and our Instagram at blast_movies_ for more bonus content. And stay tuned for our YouTube channel coming soon. Been working on a massive project there. Been thinking about 32 hours into a 46 hours of movie watching project right now. So I am very excited for what we're going to be able to bring to you guys. And we will catch you next week. Let me close it out with a little chug from the boss.
Can you finish it this time?
How far do you think I can get?
Maybe a sip. That's a huge gulp.
If I go anymore, I'm going to throw up.
It's the water.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.